Hey everyone, this is Rita Kessler, and I'm ridiculously excited right now because on the line I have Steve Norman from Spandau Ballet. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Rita. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you very much. Very happy to be on the road again.
Now, you're in Toronto right now, right?
Right now, yes, that's right. Yeah, we've got a show tonight. It's the first time in Toronto for a long time. It's the first kind of American tour for a long time as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys are going to be playing in D.C. tomorrow night, and you've never been here.
Yeah, that's right. I've never been to D.C.
What's up with that? You guys have toured so many times, and you never ended up in D.C.
Yes, I know. I don't know why these things happen like that. I mean, we went on the road, as you probably might be aware, is about 4 or 5 years ago, and we didn't go to America at all. I don't think we realized until, I know, last year, just over a year ago, we went to Austin, Texas. And we played at the South by Southwest Festival.
Right, that's where I first heard about the documentary that you guys are touring with.
And it was a real shock for all of us, because as soon as we got there, there was such a sort of kind of fuss about the band. And we didn't realize. We thought that because we hadn't been to America for such a long time, that you guys would have forgotten about us. And it wasn't. There was still a lot of love for Spandau. So we thought, well, when we do go out later this year, we'll kick off in America. So we did a few dates on the West Coast, and we said, like, we're going to come back and see what we can do. And that's why we're here now.
Yeah, and I knew you had to reschedule a few dates. We were really glad that DC was able to be rescheduled to have the show now, as opposed to earlier in the year when you guys were supposed to be here.
Well, that's good. I mean, a few people were put out by that, and I do apologize, but, you know, it made a lot more sense to coincide it with the rest of the film, and, you know, that's where we were last night in Toronto, just showing the film there. And it just seems to be the most perfect tool, if you like, to hang on to a tour, and vice versa. You know, it's a bit different these days. It used to be like the album was the most important thing, and then you toured to promote the album. Almost now, especially with us, the most important thing is our live shows. And the album is kind of become secondary. So we thought, well, we've got a great story here. Why don't we sort of make a film? And that seems to have become the main sort of thing that is promoting our tour, and vice versa. You know, we've got the whole kind of package at the moment. We've got a greatest hits album with 3 new tracks, and we've been busy boys for the past year, Rita.
You certainly have. I've heard the new tracks. They're very, very good. Full disclosure here, I am a fan. I know during the movie, which I did get to see yesterday, which was fantastic. I've been waiting to see it since I heard all the buzz at South by Southwest. You said, well, they said in the film, at that point in the 80s, you were either a Durante or you were a Spandau fan. So, full disclosure, I was a Durante, but I was also a very big Spandau fan.
Do you know what? That's what it was. I mean, people sort of felt that they had to take sides, but I think secretly, that, you know, people are into both bands. You know, not a million miles apart. I mean, musically, there are differences. But culturally, and the fact that, you know, the young guys, you know, from a similar movement, I think there's going to be a lot of crossover. There's going to be a crossover there. And I'm getting that a lot from people, that admission that actually I like both of you guys, which is cool. I mean, now we're sort of, we never fell out or anything with Duran Duran. There was a lovely rivalry back in the day. We never, for example, we never released a single at the same time. I don't know if that was a conscious decision, but it just made sure that we didn't, you know, because we didn't want to get that Blur Oasis sort of standoff, which we had in the UK, where it was like, okay, now this is it now. Who's gonna be number one? And we avoided all that, really. The only kind of competition besides that we had with Duran was when we bumped into each other socially or at a TV show, in Europe somewhere, and we had like drinking sessions, to be honest with you.
So it's a friendly rivalry, I guess you could say.
Yeah, you know, it's a friendly rivalry. It's exactly what it was. I mean, we're obviously sort of supportive of our own bands, but we're all mates now with each other. In fact, John Taylor, at the end of last year, we showed the film in Los Angeles, and John Taylor came along, and he saw the film at the premiere there, and he wrote a lovely piece, a paragraph, for the Duran Duran website, just saying how great the film is, got to go and see it. He said, I hadn't even seen Steve Norman for 20 years, great to bump into him, you know. And when we saw each other, we just hugged each other, and, you know, there's pictures of us just grinning wildly, you know.
Well, it's like seeing old friends, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, he even wrote the preface for our program, which is, you know, for the companies, the live shows. Just talking about it. He's a very intelligent, very loving man, John Taylor. I have to say, I think he's a really, really sweet individual. He's a lovely man.
Well, that's good to know. Okay, yeah. Well, let's get back to you guys real quick.
Okay.
I said, I did see the movie yesterday, and I'd been waiting to see it. And I guess from a fan perspective, as I was seeing it, I thought it was amazing. I learned a lot about the band that I didn't even really know, like the fact that you guys were pretty much the pioneers of the new romantic movement.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to be around in the late 70s as a band, kind of looking for something to pin us onto, if you see. You know, if you look back historically, you look at any sort of major movement like the Mods and... you know, the Mods had like the Who and the Small Faces back in the 60s. They were the band for that movement. And then there was the whole psychedelia movement, and Pink Floyd became their band of choice. And it just felt sort of that when we were going to this club called The Blitz, and prior to that Billy's, from which the new romantic movement really came from. Really, it was just this small club in London, and then before you know it, there was a small club in Liverpool, other major cities around the UK, and then around the globe. But early on, there was no band that represented that scene, and we were there, and it was just a matter of us literally stepping up on this tiny little stage in this club called The Blitz, and also find a name, because we didn't really have a name for ourselves. And that's really how we became the sort of musical spearhead of this whole movement. But in that club, it was a very sort of healthy hotbed of ideas. We would all get absolutely smashed, like you normally do when you go out clubbing as a teenager. But you know, when people are full of these ideas, and sometimes it's full of hot air, or it's ideas that never get, you know, carried out. You wake up in the morning, you forget all about it. The difference about then, it was so creative that people did something about it. They remembered the ideas they had the day before. And as a consequence, you know, a lot of sort of creative individuals came out to be very successful in different fields, not just musically. I mean, you had Boy George there. He was the hat check guy, or Gail, as we used to call him at the time. You know, and he said, you know, I remember we went to his house once. It was a squat he shared with various other people, and we did a photo session very early on in early 1980, and he shouted down the stairs, I can sing better than your singer, and we shouted back, we'll go and form a band then, you know, and he did.
So you guys are responsible for Culture Club too?
Yeah. So very important time, really. And yes, I guess we did spearhead that whole movement. But before you knew it, there was bands all around the world that were jumping on board.
Right. Well, by the time you guys were, I guess, primed to hit it big in the States, I mean, the first song that we heard from you really that got really True. Big here in the U.S., of course, is True, which to me seems like not a completely different sound, but definitely a different bend from the synth-heavy music from your early singles to
That's
what you
right.
did. How do you get to that point to change your sound that much to go that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, interestingly, the film, we wanted that to be reflected in the film. We wanted to show people's history for everyone that had jumped on board at different points in the band's career. When we first started, I guess, you know, everyone sort of picks out on certain tunes they already know and play along to them. I mean, we were kind of R&B-ish in the beginning, and all that sort of 60s, Small Faces, even the Faces, Rolling Stones. That's how we kind of cut our teeth and got into the songwriting. And then when we started going to the Blitz and Billy's, there was all this music that Rusty Egan, who was the DJ there, who actually has been opening up on a lot of our European tour as our support. He brought a lot of interesting electronic records from Berlin, from Germany. So people like Kraftwerk and La Dusseldorf and, you know, all this other really interesting, pulsy, wavy synth music, you know. And if you think about it, he was very responsible for helping to shape the sound of the 80s, because that's what the 80s was about, wasn't it? The early
right.
80s, is electronica. And so we adopted that immediately, and our music became less sort of R&B and more four on the floor, cool, clubby. There was like two albums almost like that. The first album is totally electronica.
Mm-hmm.
Second album, we started to branch out into more sort of funky. Everyone else was jumping on board that wagon at the time. We thought, okay, well, let's go more organic. And we sort of had brass sections and the Chant Number One sort of period, really. And it was only on our third album, True, that we decided that we wanted to go more mainstream. So it was a conscious decision to you know, Gary was then writing more melodic tunes. I picked up the saxophone, and that became our blue-eyed soul period, which I guess the planet, the globe, knows more about than anything else. So what we're trying to do now on this tour, we're paying a little bit more of an homage to that early period and just filling in the gap for people.
So you're playing stuff that people want to hear. Do you guys switch it up a bit when in each city, or do you guys stay to the same formula in each city with what you're playing? What do you do?
I beg your pardon, I missed that.
No, do you guys, when you're a set list that you're playing, I mean, do you mix it up? I guess you play from all over. The fans are obviously going to want to hear the hits. Do you mix it up a bit?
You know what? We play all the hits. It's the longest show we've ever done. We've not really dropped much. We've just added certain sections. We've got new tunes, of course. We've got three new tunes that we put in there. We're showing people what we do now. We've shown people what we did when we first started. But that really important bit, all the middle stuff, which people know more, you know, that's very much in there. We're playing all the hits. So we're catering for everyone, really. It's almost like a... not quite chronological, but it is a journey through the sound of Spandau Ballet.
I like that. That's really a great way to put it. Do you, I know it can be hard to pick, do you have a favorite song of all the ones you've ever done?
Do I have a favorite song?
Yeah.
That's a tricky one. I like the early stuff. I like the dangerous period, you know, when we had other bands looking over at their shoulders, you know, to see us creeping up behind them. And then, you know, we were quite... I wouldn't say arrogant, but we had this unshakable belief in ourselves at the time. And that's reflected in certain tunes, like To Cut a Long Story Short. And I guess Chant Number One has always been a firm favorite of mine, because it's the dance element side of it. It's the percussion. It's the, you know, it's the brass. It's the, it's always, it's quite, it's still got that danger to it, which I really love. So I guess Chant Number One, I love that tune.
Okay, you know, you don't have to pick one if you want to put you on the spot there.
You know, if you don't have to pick one, I love different tunes for different reasons. I love True, obviously, it's been fantastic for us. We never tire of playing it live.
That's what I was going to ask you, because a lot of people seem to look at it as a curse sometimes with the song that everybody thinks of when they think of you.
You know, it's really strange, because in different territories, in different countries, people pick different tunes. In Italy, it's I'll Fly For You. Now, I don't know... I'm not sure if that resonates in America and Canada as much as True does. True was pretty much global, but in America, it was definitely True. When PM Dawn sampled the tune, and, you know, I remember I went down there with Tony to have a listen to the guys recording it, and Tony was actually in the video. And that was number one in America, and because of that, it opened up doors for us on the urban scene. You know, I mean,
and a whole new audience at that point, when it's been past the time that you guys were big.
I mean, I think people thought we were, you know, didn't realize we were just these working class white guys from London, you know. you know, so they've been great. True Live, it always feels different every time. Nothing's written in stone, you know. There's always different sort of inflections, different amount of bars, where there's quite a few nods and winks on stage, you know. I have to look for Tony to see where he's going to ad-lib so that I don't go over the top of him too much, and all that kind of stuff. Keeps it real, keeps it live. We're you know, even if I say we're a pretty hot live band, I would say. It's the thing we enjoy and do better, I think.
Well, I'm glad we're finally going to get to see that tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let me ask you a question. I know the film is very honest. I mean, it goes through everything. Was that
brutally
tough to watch and see how that went through? I mean, maybe more for Gary than anybody else, but to me,
I mean,
it was uncomfortable to watch slightly. You know, it kind of painted Gary in this bad light.
It was a real sort of expensive therapy in a way, or you could say cheap therapy, because when we were talking to the George Henkins, she directed the movie, her take on it, you know, she's given it the soul, I always think, and she picked out on our friendship. That's what runs through the film. It's a great documentary, and it does portray us as young kids, and the story and our influences and why we got into it, and and also, you know, how what the backdrop was at the time, politically, socially. It shows you club culture, youth culture. It's all in there. But what is the underlying thing, which I think is what resonates with people more than anything, is that we're just human beings. We're young guys that had this fantastic job, but we also we have our human frailties, like everybody has. So, you know, and then us, we fell apart. We loved each other dearly. We went to school and grew up together. Gary and I were best mates. We formed the band. But then we had this massive fallout, really nasty fallout. And then there's the redemption, the finding each other and becoming friends again, even firmer friends than we were in the beginning.
Really? Okay, so the underlying theme of the friendship is what helped you guys get through that rough period and actually be able to reform again?
Totally. Totally, it took a long time, and we weren't even in the same room together for nearly 20 years. And then when we did get together, well, it was still a little bit nervous, you know. Even the last tour, I would say, was as much finding ourselves again, you know, as anything. So as a consequence, this time around, we're all so relaxed, you know. We're creative now. We're enjoying it more than ever.
Does that have a little bit to do with the fact that you guys are older as well? I mean, you
know,
you do change a bit as you get older.
I would say that. Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I kind of had, if I'm honest, I had a bit of a mini nervous breakdown in the early 90s because suddenly these guys, this band, suddenly dissipated, and it was like, oh my goodness, you know, what do I do now? I can't believe that I'm never going to sort of play in this with these guys again. It was awful. So I just took myself off to Ibiza, thought, well, I'll spend a year there or something. I ended up living there for over 12 years.
What you do there in Ibiza help you find your voice as a musician?
It very much did. I think Ibiza, you know, you hear a lot of stories about it. You can very much lose yourself there, and people do. They can't handle it because of the club side of it. But it's also a very spiritual island, and I found that immediately. And I think you can lose yourself in Ibiza, but you can also find yourself if you're looking. And that's what happened to me. I just found myself, got involved in different kind of music, whereas I put the saxophone down because it was so symbolic of Spandau. It was painful. You know, just to even see the thing. I then picked it up again and started playing with DJs and all that kind of stuff, which is what I still do occasionally. I love all that dance music. Yeah, but I mean, you asked me earlier on what it was like to see the film first time. Well, when we were in South by Southwest just over a year ago, that was the first time that we'd actually seen the film together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then the first time we saw the film, you know. So it was a real eye-opener because we did our voiceovers individually.
Right.
We didn't know what each other had said. And, you know, I remember when I did my voiceovers, I turned around to George at the end of it, and I said to her, George, look, okay, I've got that off my chest now. I've been honest, but I don't want to open up any wounds. I don't want to kick anything off again. Can we just sort of take all that out, or take this out and take that out? And she very... very sternly said to me, no, this is exactly what we need in this film. And I'm guessing that she said the same to Gary and to all the other members.
Did that make you nervous at all?
It did a little bit. There was stuff in there, you know. I mean, I know there was one bit in particular where I'm saying, well, you know, I pinpointed Gary. And I said, you know, that was something he said or did that, for me at the time, felt like it was the end of the band. There's a line... there's three things that we always believed as a band that split bands up. And one is money, the other is drugs, and the third is women. And I said, well, I think there's a fourth one, ego. And at that point, she sort of kind of, the camera went to Gary. And
I remember that.
You know, and I'm squirming because Gary's sitting right next to me. He's on my right, you know. I'm then squirming. But he's taken all that on the chin. And, you know, he realized he's not quite the same guy as he was. He's still driven, you know, don't get me wrong, but you know, he's very much a different guy in that respect now. And you need someone like that, I think, in any band that really is that has that unshakable belief and to help carry it all forward, you know.
Right.
I mean, not just his songs, it's his character as well.
With some of these new songs that you guys are doing, do all of you help in with the songwriting now, or is that still just Gary's thing, or how does that work?
No, we do. I mean, Gary and I wrote a song together about 4 years ago called Once More. That was a lovely experience because him and I used to write songs years ago before we actually signed a record contract, you know, as school kids, really. And we hadn't done that, like with an acoustic guitar sort of sitting opposite each other, you know, writing the songs here. And I loved that. That was a lovely time. And on this album... we all got together and we had like 4 days to come up with 2 songs, which we were going to then show Trevor Horn, who produced the two new, what became 3 new songs, while we were in the studio. you know, shows the kind of level of creativity at the moment and how easy we are to work with each other. We only needed to do two. We had 4 days to show the songs, work them out, get them recorded and, as in the demo stage and get them off. And we managed to do three. So who knows what we're, in a year's time, if we're working on an album, that should be an interesting thing. And one of the songs was Tony's. So it's, you know, it's a strong song. We do open the set with it at the moment, okay, called Soul Boy. So everyone's chipping in.
I like that song. That's one of the songs that's on the compilation that I have. So I like
that.
Yeah,
exactly. So there's three new songs. And there's also This Is the Love. And one of my favorites, Steel. Steel for me is made for America, if I'm honest. It's more in a true vein. I don't think you can ever compare anything to True because it's so massive. But it feels like True to me. It feels like one of those Marvin Gaye, Al Green kind of vibes, you know.
So did you say there is a new album that may be in the works, or what do you guys think is going to happen after this tour?
We really don't have any time at the moment, that's for sure. You know, it's been nonstop for a year. It's been full-on promotion, working on the film, working on the album, the new tunes. And,
does Tony still have the solo thing going on? I know you've toured with him, and you and John and Tony go out.
With Tony, you say?
Yeah, with Tony. Is he still solo doing that kind of stuff?
He always has that going, you know. I mean, last time round, it was a finite time that we had because he had all these other plans. This time round, he wants to do things, but he feels more relaxed than ever. And we're already talking about doing live things next year. We're already talking about, as I say, an album of fresh new songs, all new material for Spandau. And we also do need to take a little bit of a break. I think, you know, if it's all full on Spandau, you know, it's the thing about us is it's nice to go away and come back. I'm not talking about like 20 years anymore, though. I think just a period of a few weeks or even months, you know, just to get ourselves together, get some new tunes together, reconvene after a little break and say, right, guys, you know, let's have that week in the studio and lay new stuff out on the table and see what everyone's got. And then we'll sift through them, work on stuff, and then decide what works. You know, that I think that will be something that we'll do early on next year. But for this year, it's full on touring. I don't think anyone's thinking about anything else at the moment. We're still having a great amount of fun, as I say, and things keep being added on. At the moment, we're going to October, I think it is. We've got a gig in October. There's a talk of another one in November. There'll be things coming in all the time. But it's a great position to be in. We're in a fantastic position right now. I would say better than ever. So relaxed. It's great.
That's good to hear. It sounds like Spandau Ballet is here to stay this time.
I hope so.
At least for the time being. Okay, well, I know you're a busy guy. I've taken up a lot of your time. I so appreciate you giving me the chance to sit down and talk with you for a bit. And looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night. So are there any last words you may want to say to your Washington fans?
I mean, for you, come up and say hello afterwards. You know, for everyone else, please get into our show because the thing that makes the show, we know what we can do, but it's the audience that makes it special for us, and that's when we take it away. You know, if the audience is into it, then we're well into it as well.